Okay, we do have a quorum. I think because we are on Zoom, or we're obviously, I think things might go a little bit slower in terms of communications from what we would normally do, but I think it's probably important that we let staff and others make their presentations without disrupting them, and then ask questions after their presentations are made, unless staff has points that they would like to have us ask or get involved in the interim. Does that make sense for everyone?
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
Okay. We do have a called audience here. Excuse me? Okay. We do have a call to audience, and at this time, any member of the public is allowed to address the commission on any issue not listed on today's agenda. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, individual commission members may ask town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. However, the commission may not discuss or take legal action on matters raised during the call to audience. In order to speak during the call to audience, please specify what you wish to discuss when completing the blue card. Well, the blue card is a communication to Ronnie. And have you received anything, Ronnie?
I have not, Commissioner Beasley.
Okay, and then since we don't have anything, then we will move forward. Staff liaison report. We have anything? Okay. And the regular session agenda, in talking to communicating with David earlier, he has recommended that the Budget and Finance Commission discuss the pension funding policy after the presentation of the town manager's recommended budget. And I think that makes sense because there may be certain things in there that might impact our discussion on that policy. So I would like to rearrange items number 3 and 4 if everyone is in sync with that.
That's fine.
Yep. Okay with that.
Okay, then we will do that. Let's review the regular meeting minutes for the last meeting. Has everyone had a chance to take a look at those?
Yes.
Yes, I have.
Any comments that anyone has?
I had none.
No.
Comments.
Okay. Do I hear a motion to approve those minutes?
I'll move to approve the minutes.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Can you do a roll call, please, Ryan?
Chairman Beasley?
Yes.
Vice Chairman Latchford?
Yes.
Commissioner Mason?
Yes.
Commissioner Silverson?
Yes.
And then those minutes are approved as read. We have a new chief financial officer since we met last. David, you might want to introduce yourself and perhaps give us a little bit of background at the same time, please.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and commission members. My name's Dave Gephardt. I think I've met a couple of you personally, picking up your town manager recommended budget binders from the town. Certainly a pleasure and an honor to be here this evening with you. Wish that we were all meeting in person, as I'm sure that you all wish the same. It's a little bit, have to admit, just personally, these Zoom meetings are a little bit awkward, especially as it relates to presentations and just the interpersonal aspects can be a little bit challenging. But hopefully you'll bear with us through that. Looking forward to a good, productive meeting this evening. My background, I've been in public finance for, 20 some years now. Started as an auditor with a CPA firm. Originally from Oregon, moved down to Southern Arizona about 13 years ago. Happy to be down here, lived in the same house in Oro Valley for the past 13 years with my family. So really excited to work with you. And again, looking forward to the rest of this evening and having a productive meeting moving forward. So with that said, I'd like to also introduce, I don't know if you guys are aware or have met our senior budget analyst, Michael Dykson. He's actually going to be presenting the monthly financial update this evening. Michael came to us from the town of Marana and has done an outstanding job in jumping in with all of his might into this budget process and really has been a huge asset to the town in the quality and the acumen that he's brought to the position. So Michael, if you can lead us through the monthly financial update. Is Michael on?
I see his mic is muted.
Hey, David, we're getting him set up. He should be able to unmute himself and present now.
Okay, thank you.
There we go. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and Chief Commissioners. I'd like to just quickly introduce myself. My name is Michael Dykman, as Dave mentioned. The senior budget analyst here at the town of Oro Valley, been here since about the middle of January. Really happy to be aboard. And it's my privilege to present the financial update through April to you all. So before we dive into the 2021 manager's recommended budget, we'd really just give you a quick update on the finances of the town's general fund, highway fund, and community center fund through April. Hopefully this will provide some good information before we dig into next year's budget. I'd like to provide you all with an update on revenues and expenditures by fund, and then answer any questions you may have at the end. Starting off with the general fund, by your packets, you can see overall revenues are as expected, if not slightly better through April 2020. I'd like to focus kind of on four big areas of revenue for the general fund, those being local sales tax collections, licenses and permits, state shared revenues, and then charges for services. Combined, these four areas make up over 90% of budgeted revenue for the fund. So through April, sales taxes total a little over $17 million, or about 88% of the budget amount of $19.3 million. It is important to note the timing of these revenues. Sales taxes the town receives for the month of April are actually going to be from transactions that happened in March. And as you know, the first half of March didn't see any large-scale impacts related to COVID-19. Within the next few weeks, the town should be receiving its May sales taxes, which will account for activity in April. And that's kind of when we'll expect to see those sharp contractions in consumer spending. But as I mentioned, because these figures do account for March transactions, for the most part, collections were as expected. The next revenue source is licenses and permits. The bulk of these revenues are going to be related to commercial permits and single-family residential permits, or SFR permits. As you've seen by the report, this revenue source is already at 107% of budget, or about $2.1 million. The main reasoning for this is going to be strong SFR and commercial permit issuances through the first three quarters of fiscal year 2020. state shared revenues. These are revenues received from the state's revenue sharing program. These consist of state shared sales taxes, state shared income taxes, and BLT revenues. Again, these revenues, this revenue source is trending as expected through April. We are expected to come in slightly below budget by the end of fiscal year, and that's primarily due to anticipated reductions in the state shared sales tax collections. As the state collects less than their portion of sales taxes, that's basically less that can be distributed to cities and towns. And then the fourth large revenue source for the general fund is going to be charges for services. And a bulk of these revenues are going to really be related to parks and recreation. And as you can imagine, because of closures and cancellations, these are under budget and are anticipated to end the year under budget as well. Through April, the town's at about 72% of budget, or $1.8 million. With facilities beginning to reopen now, we are anticipating some additional revenue. But by June 30, we are anticipated to end about 18% below the budget amount. On the expense side of things for general fund, all areas are pretty much trending as expected or below budget through April. As you may be aware, the town is currently operating that once a position becomes vacant, it's kind of put on a freeze per se, and a determination is made if it's critical to fill the position right away or if it can be left vacant to generate some salary savings. Because of this and some other personnel savings throughout the fiscal year, we do anticipate to have about $750,000 in personnel savings, in addition to about $530,000 in O&M savings. And these O&M savings are really thanks to the individual departments being mindful of their spending. So in total, we do anticipate to end the year at $40.6 million, or about $1.4 million below our budgeted amount, $41.9. Moving over to the highway fund quickly, the main revenue source here is going to be state shared HERF revenues. Through April, this revenue source is trending fairly normal at $2.9 million, or 81% of budget. We do anticipate this revenue source to come in about $90,000 or 2.5% below budget due to impacts from COVID-19. As demand for gasoline goes down, so do these revenues. On the expense side for the highway fund, expenditures are currently below budget through April, which should come actually closer to budgeted levels. As several CIP projects are closed out and invoices are paid, we'll see those expenses come up. And again, thanks to savings by departments, we do anticipate the end of the year about $40,000 or 1% below the budget amount. Moving over to the community center fund, revenues as expected through April, but we do anticipate that to end the year below budget from impacts from COVID-19. Contracted operating revenues, these are revenues generated via the golf operator Trune. Through April, these revenues are looking good at 86% of budget, about $2.8 million. Trune is forecasting, however, to end the year about 4% down, or about $130,000 below budget. The town operating revenues, these kind of mirror the charges for services in the general fund. Because of closures and cancellations at the community center, these revenues are currently only at 65% of budget. With the community center starting to open back up now and some limited capacity, we do anticipate some more revenues, but we'll definitely end the year below budget in this category. Other revenues is primarily related to the half-cent sales tax. Again, because these are transactions that happened in March, this revenue source is still trending as expected at 87% of budget, about $2.1 million. On the expense side of things for the community center fund through April, we're currently at about $5.1 million, or 79% of the budget. We are forecasting the end of year about $300,000 below budget, actually, or about close to 5%. And this is mostly attributed to O&M and personnel savings, kind of due to the facility closures that we had earlier in this year. With that, I'll gladly take any kind of questions.
The local sales tax number that's in there at about 2.4 million, that represents the half 1% that's dedicated to the community center fund?
Correct, yes.
Okay. I do have a question on the interest income that's being shown in the general fund. It shows a year-end estimate of a little over $500,000. Could you discuss a little bit how those investments are being made, what the duration is of that portfolio, and what the components are?
Of course, Chairman, that's a great question. For that one, I may actually defer to our CFO, Mr. Gephardt, on more on the investment and investing side of things.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, unfortunately, that's something that I'm going to have to get back to you on. I don't have, that's not an area, I've only been on the job about 2 months. That's not an area that I've dug into yet. It's on my list of things to do. But I know we do contract out with an investment advisor who maintains the portfolio for us. I have not had an opportunity to connect with that investment advisor yet. Generally, our strategy since I've been here has been hold to maturity. We have not directed him to buy or sell anything. So that's something that I could certainly bring back to the commission at the either the next meeting or the following meeting. But I don't, unfortunately, I don't have details on it in front of me at this point in time.
And now, $500,000 of income is fairly material there. And obviously the Fed has interest rates at roughly zero. Most money market mutual funds, if you're lucky, you're at 0.1%. And I do know that you've got a chunk of the money in a local government investment pool. So yeah, I think we do need to know a little bit more about what that is, because I would expect that while they might have a duration that's going to generate some interest above 0.1%, that's got to be trending down.
Certainly, I would agree with that entire assessment.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question if you...
Fire away.
Thank you very much. Thank you for that report, Michael, I appreciate that. And this might be a question for both you and David. And let's go back to the general fund just for a second. I noted that the results that we're showing at the end of April show us that we're performing with about a $1.8 million surplus. And the projections that you've still got in place, now maybe they haven't been changed yet with recent activity, but they're showing that we're going to meet the budget, which will generate a deficit of $2.6 million. And if you sort of calculate the how do you get to that, we're going to have a deficit of about $4 million for the next 2 months, which would be, of course, May, which is completed, and June. Is that anticipated? Is that what you think we're really going to do?
Yeah, Commissioner, that's a great question. So for that, these year-end projections are fairly conservative. A big factor what's driving that deficit of about that $2.2 million is on the expense side. So we do err on the side of caution when forecasting expenditures. We're always going to aim high there than rather low. On the year-end estimates for revenues, some of these are fairly certain, like state shared revenues are they're fairly set and known. The big question mark when forecasting obviously is going to be sales tax collections. So what staff did when we took a look at that was we went month by month back when we made these. So we didn't have April data quite at the time. We went month by month, so April, May, and June for the fiscal year by category. I mean, tried to anticipate how the categories would be affected by impacts of COVID. And we always kind of made those, again, a little on the conservative side. So yeah. Hopefully we'll know in the next few weeks once we receive May collections, which is a full month from April, kind of what those revenues will trend at.
So you have, just to make sure I understand clearly, so you have not projected some of the savings that you're anticipating in the expense side through the end of the year. That hasn't gone into your projection yet?
We have, so known salary savings and things like that, and savings that departments know, like if they're not going to spend certain items, we did factor those in. Generally though, every fiscal year, there's always some unknown savings where departments don't spend 100% of budgets and stuff like that. For those, we just still assume that they're gonna spend their budgets unless otherwise identified.
Yeah, I guess understandable. I guess my concern is that obviously is what's happening on the cash side. If you have $4 million that you need to project or are going to be a deficit, I'm not sure how much of that is cash, how much I've been making flow, and is it impacting any of our projects that we currently have underway. So have you any sense of what May looks like now that I know we just got out of it here a couple of days ago, but any pulse on what May did really look like?
On the sales tax side, Commissioner, not so much yet. I'm eagerly looking forward to those as well. On some of the other categories, such as our intergovernmental and our licenses and permits, those are still looking at surprisingly, they're not amazing, but they're not nearly as bad as we would anticipate. For example, SFR permits issued through the month of April were 32, which is a very strong number for the town. I haven't quite gotten what the May numbers were yet. So some of those revenue sources, again, your estimates were done conservatively. So once we do kind of receive some of more of that data, some of these year-end estimates may be revised up slightly.
Okay. So I guess the other concern or impact that this might have is, of course, on the budget, because if we are truly looking at May and June and having it that's being reported of $2 million, when July 1st turns over on the calendar, we're putting into place a new plan that says that we're only going to be generating less than $200,000. This is just general fund now, $200,000 deficit per year. And so I'm trying to get from the $2 million that we may currently be posting as a deficit to the $200,000 that will be a deficit starting July 1st. And using that old term that we hear on TV, this light switch, we're in a dimmer situation. So I'm trying to see how that's going to flow forward and whether we have a much larger jump in terms of getting into our budget than what we may have thought.
Commissioner, once we were while forming the manager's recommended budget and moving forward to with the budget, that's definitely something we're keeping a close eye on. Is kind of we want to be as accurate, conservative, but still as accurate as possible on where we end the year up, so we know exactly on fund balance moving forward, and then kind of what the first few months of the next fiscal year will look like as well. Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Latchford.
There's going to be some monitoring of additional revenues and keeping a handle on that stream. And is that something, I know you're going to communicate it to the council. Could I request if we can get a copy of that to keep us informed and give us a good idea? And I'm a little concerned here about the deficit that we're looking at in the month we're in with May and June.
Commissioner Latchford?
Yes.
So I heard you say that we are budgeting a $200,000 deficit for next fiscal year in the general fund. Did I hear that correctly, or did I misunderstand you?
I know that the budget that we're going to be discussing has in the general fund $2.2 million deficit as budgeted, but again, not knowing how the pace of the organization might handle, when we get to that, you're going to have to generate on average per month less than $200,000. If you're now running a deficit, a run rate of $2 million in deficit per month, for whatever reason, for a lot of reasons, and we're missing a lot of it, we're not getting the sales tax, we've got a lot of expenses, And we're going to get into the next year where we are supposed to run under 200,000 per month on average. That's a large leap. I'm just wondering whether that's realistic, but I'm also just wondering whether or not our projection for this year has not been tied down as tightly as we need to.
Yeah, so I think that's an excellent point and astute observation. I think what I would say in response to that is the town, has historically and continues, even looking into next fiscal year, been very, very conservative with revenue forecasts. We just received from the League of Oregon Cities our state shared revenue forecast for next year. We were about $147,000, even conservative from their, from the numbers that they shared with us, which of course that's our second largest revenue source behind sales tax revenue. So I think when you look at next fiscal year and start projecting out, looking at part of what we've done is really analyze by category, drive into specific categories of our revenue sources, and try to firm up and utilize as tight and as quality of estimates as possible. And so, I already spoke to state shared revenues, but in regard to sales tax revenues, I think there's the idea that there's going to be some pent up demand, that as things open back up, certainly they're not going to open up all at once, but there should be some pent up demand that is released into the economy, and we see the benefit of that through the first part of the fiscal year. Certainly, it's going to be, I would anticipate, very volatile from month to month, and then the second part of the fiscal year from January forward, I think our anticipation is that we would hopefully be behind this and come back to more normal numbers, although it's certainly not as high as we've seen historically over the last 2 years specifically. I hope that addresses your question and provides some of the concepts and of what we're looking at and how they factor into our estimates.
Yeah, I appreciate that explanation, David. That helps a lot. I guess my concern should really be centered not so much on the upcoming budget, which is much more important, but you know, what's happening today and what's going on with May and June. That's kind of the little hole that we don't have filled right at the moment, and we probably won't. But I recognize that to be able to get from where we are reporting on April 30th to where we're projecting on June 30th, we're showing a tremendous deficit. And it's almost $4 million. So, and I was listening to Michael, and it's true that maybe some of the projections that we, or actions, and strike that, actions that we have taken, just haven't been put into the projections yet. And I want to get a sense of how well we're controlling things when we're putting out that the general fund is losing $4 million within 2 months. And that's all I was trying to do. So I'm going to kind of leave the budget alone for a little bit because we have a lot of work to do. Maybe the address needs to be on what's happening in May and June. I hope that helps explain my question.
Just a quick question. Are you still predicting your fund balance for general fund at the end of this fiscal year to be around the $17 million?
Commissioner Mason, yes, we're projecting fund balance to be close to $17.4 million at the end of the fiscal year.
Okay, thank you.
Did you have a question, Kathy?
Kind of piggybacking on what Commissioner Letchford was asking about, are there any specific actions that were taken to reduce expenditures for the next couple of months? You know that the sales tax are going to come in lower, and is there anything specific and kind of concrete that has been identified so far between all the different departments, actions that they're taking to reduce the expenditures to offset those in, reduction in sales taxes or state taxes.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'd like to jump in on this, and then the departments are also here as well, department directors. And I think we have, I touched on some of that in our in my budget message, but so I instituted a hiring freeze back at the beginning of March. So that remains in place. We've also, we cut out some specific projects in different departments that we weren't able to complete. And for example, we were gonna do a retail analysis. That didn't happen. That was a savings in that budget of $70,000. You know, there are a couple of other things that we just pulled off and didn't do, some capital expenditures. Cut back on travel and training pretty much for the rest of the fiscal year. So that was, I mean, not only could nobody travel, right, and all kinds of things were canceled, but really it wasn't prudent to send our folks out. And then the departments went through their, you know, every department is different in terms of where they can cut back on costs. And so, you know, between all of those, and I think just to reiterate something that Michael mentioned earlier, you know, one of the reasons why we're able to, because remember, we have a planned use of excess reserves, and we do that every year. We use excess reserves for our general fund budget. And if you go back on all of our budgets, that's how we fund capital projects. And so that deficit is a planned use of those excess reserves, unless I've missed something and Michael can jump in. So really, we're ending the year on budget because of the cutbacks, and more importantly, because the first eight months of the fiscal year, we were up significantly from our conservative sales tax projections, and that really paid off for us. So had we continued on the trajectory that we were on as of, you know, the beginning of March, we would have been at 10% over budget in terms of our sales collections. So that helped mitigate significantly where we're coming in. And, you know, I feel very confident about our year-end projections. They're very conservative. You know, and I feel confident about our projections moving forward in the next fiscal year. Not to mention now, of course, we've got access to what will likely be $5.3 million in state funding that will free up general fund money and give us that additional cushion. So I think we're looking pretty good for next fiscal year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question for you on attachment D, which is related to fund balances. Number one, is this a typo, or these balances on the far right column are through February, or is that actually April?
Correct, Chairman. That's a great catch. That actually is a typo, that those are through April.
Okay. Question two. Of these fund balances, what is available for discretionary application?
Chairman Beasley, great question. That one does vary fund to fund on what it can be used for. That being said, the fund balance is different than cash on hand to spend. So discretionary spending does vary different from fund to fund.
Take me through some of these. I'd like to know, I understand the highway fund is the highway fund, and I think the funding for that is restricted, correct?
Correct.
Okay, now what about the general fund, seizure and forfeiture, a whole bunch of these others? Is there flexibility on any of these funds?
There is flexibility, as in that we can certainly program fund balance for expenditures. like the seizure and forfeiture funds, and there are a lot of other considered special revenue funds, so they are limited in what they can be used for. So they definitely have restrictions and stipulations in place on what they can be spent on. Similar to like impact fee funds, can only fund development, not existing, things like that.
Again, could you just go down this list? I need to get a better handle on what is available and what is not.
Sure, I'll do my best, and Dave can definitely jump in too. So like I mentioned on the seizures and forfeitures funds, those are going to be restricted funds there, special revenue funds. The community center fund is pretty straightforward. Revenues generated and excess fund balances there have to be dedicated towards the community center.
Is that set by city or by town council designation or some other regulation?
For the community center fund, it should be set, by town policy.
Okay.
On the municipal debt service fund, I recommend that one is solely reserved for making principal and interest payments on existing debt.
Right.
Same with the Oracle Road debt service fund. The alternative water resources and the potable water system, the two water impact fee funds, those again are special revenue funds dedicated to expanding water infrastructure.
That's because this is the enterprise entity is the only thing that can utilize that.
Correct, yes.
Okay.
Similar to those two water impact fee funds is the townway roadway impact fee fund. And again, that is a revenue sources that must be dedicated towards expanding roadways and road infrastructure in the right of way of the town.
Is that because of the source of the funds or, again, something designated by the town?
State law. Any of the impact fees are restricted by state law.
Okay.
And then yeah, similar to that too, on the Parks and Recreation Impact Fee Fund, similar to the other impact fee funds, that's restricted for parks and recreation infrastructure.
Okay.
And same with the Police Impact Fee Fund as well, dedicated towards expanding police and public safety services. The capital fund is a fund that the town set up to dedicate towards CIP and other capital purchases, such as vehicle replacements and things like that. That one does, between other impact fee funds and things like that, this one does have less restrictions on it as it's an internal town fund.
Okay.
The revenues there can be dedicated, towards any sort of capital needs, things like that.
Okay.
The PAG RTA fund, Dave can correct me if I'm wrong, almost works more of a similar to like a pass-through fund. So revenues and expenses there, those are all done on a reimbursement basis. So we expense eligible RTA costs and then we get reimbursed. Hence also why sometimes this fund is currently through April shows a negative fund balance just because we're still awaiting some reimbursements from the RTA.
Okay.
The water utility and the stormwater utility, those are our two enterprise funds. So any revenues generated there go to expenses directly into the fund. It's a self-contained fund. And then our benefit self-insurance fund, that goes obviously as a restricted fund to pay medical benefits and things like that for the town. And then our small recreation in lieu fee fund, again, is another restricted fund, similar to like an impact fee.
So in reality, there's very few of these funds that we actually have much flexibility.
Correct. They're kind of hard to intermingle any of these funds since they're all set up to kind of to work standalone.
Okay.
One quick question. On your impact fee funds, it's been a while. Can you transfer money out of an impact fund to another fund to use, or do you have to spend it within the impact fee fund?
Commissioner Mason, no, those funds need to be spent within the fund itself. They are restricted. The only transfers that may occur that, for financial statement purposes, the water-related or stormwater-related impact fees, those get consolidated into those utilities. So so if there was a transfer out of a water impact fee fund into the water fund, it all gets consolidated from a financial statement standpoint anyway. So I wouldn't see any challenge or heartache there because you're basically accomplishing. But then begs the question, why would you do that? Because it all gets consolidated anyway. So so there's not really a purpose behind it.
I was just looking through the budget for the upcoming budget, and I'd have to go back and see which one, but I thought I saw as part of the funding or in the for some use of impact fees that there was a transfer from an impact fee fund to another fund to spend it. That was why I asked the question.
Correct. Commissioner Mason, what's going on there in the town manager's recommended budget is we're actually consolidating our two water impact fee funds into one water impact fee fund. So it's just a consolidation from two funds into one to provide simplicity and transparency.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Does anyone else have any questions having to do with the current financial situation?
Chairman Beasley, I believe we do have a hand raised on a call-in line, if I'm reading that correctly.
Is that the 520 telephone number? Okay, can we activate that?
Yes, Dave, it's Wendy. That was just me. I was just chiming in case I was needed. Sorry.
Okay, thank you very much. Anybody have any other questions for Michael or David?
No.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Great questions.
So let's go to item four here, which is the discussion having to do with the recommended budget.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'll introduce the topic. I think in the previous communication that Mr. Gephardt sent you, the intent was really to use your time tonight for whatever discussion and Q&A you wanted to have. We do not plan to go through any budget presentations since we did those last week and you've had an opportunity to review them. I do have my department directors on the call here, and they will be happy to answer any specific questions that you may have about their individual operations. In fact, I would like to respectfully ask that maybe you consider cutting them loose by six or a little after, and let the rest of us stick around for any of the more detailed discussions about fund and that sort of thing. But if it's all right, Mr. Chairman, there were some questions that were submitted in advance, and that might be a good place to start, is to review some of those submitted questions, respond to those for you, and that might also stimulate the conversation on the. And I apologize to my colleagues on the line. These are mostly not about individual departments, but they're more at the higher level. But I think it's a good place to start since you did request those in advance. So I'm going to take the first couple, and then Dave will take the ones that are more related to the finance. So okay, was that
sounds
okay?
Good.
Okay, great, terrific. The first question that was asked was, what was the criteria used to identify the department expenditure cuts? So what we did is, it's really difficult to apply the same criteria over a police department as you would apply to, a public works department in terms of looking at cuts. But what we did do is is ask our department directors, first of all, we provided a target once we did our projections, a range of target, and said, look, we all got to work together on this. And after I outlined some of the things that we were going to do, we were not going to include steps and merits. We were not going to, we're going to continue the freeze through the end of December. And a few of the other things that were already done, then it was, here's our target. Now you all need to help us and figure out how we get there. And the first level of cuts are those that really would not have impact on our service levels. So our key and overriding approach on this was to have our departments take a look at what it is that we can reduce in the budgets that will have a minimal, if any, impact on our residents and our service levels where possible. So that was our first level. And really, I just kind of had them put their potential cuts into three different levels. And we were able to meet our target by getting only through to level two cuts. And we did not need to go down into what we call our level three cuts. And again, every department, they were different. I will tell you there are some, for example, again, travel and training across the board, 40% cut overall, you know, organization wide. So there were some clear things that kind of elevated from the top. But, you know, one of the reasons why I have department directors is because they know their budgets better than I do. And so they did a tremendous job going through and identifying what we needed to cut. And it really was a very collaborative process. The next question was, the hiring freeze impacts 9 positions through the end of December. What are the estimated cost savings? December 31st, will some or all of the vacancies be filled? And how long does the recruitment process take? So I'll kind of break that out. First of all, the budget savings for these 6 months for the positions is about $217,000. And this is an important thing to share with the commission. You know, like we do every year, but particularly so for this year, our departments will be putting together a monthly spending plan. And they've already been informed about pushing off projects and major expenditures that, should we need to cut, could happen, you know, after the first of the calendar year. And so we'll be monitoring our revenues and the expenditures on a monthly basis against the spending plan so that we can catch the trends early and make any adjustments that we need to make. You all have done this in your careers. You know that it is a lot easier to make cuts at the beginning of a fiscal year, toward the beginning, than it is in the last few months, which is what we've had to do in this particular case. So our departments will be looking at that. We will not be moving forward with filling the positions until there is enough information and enough data to indicate that we'll have the revenues to support those. So, and each of the positions in terms of recruitment process could be longer. For example, we've got a planner position that's open that typically takes a lot longer to fill because there's fewer applicants for it. Than say an office assistant type of position. And so again, no green light on any positions, and they may be done on a case-by-case basis, or it might be that if we get other vacancies and from an organizational perspective, this vacant position is more important to fill than another one that's being left vacant, then I may do that as well. This is really about a review of operational efficiencies, and we understand what our obligation here is as an organization. We understand that we can't spend more than we have, and our departments are committed to that, and we have an extremely strong track record where we have not spent over our budget. And just going back even into the Great Recession, that didn't happen. So you've got the right team here to make sure that we do what is already our obligation. One of the questions was on page 2 of my budget message. It says that fiscal 21 is the first year that the town retains 100% rather than 60% of the Oro Valley marketplace in sales tax collections. This delta is basically a new revenue that could be used to make additional payments on the PSPRS unfunded liability once we get through the pandemic revenue reductions. This option could be incorporated into the city policy. Actually, this current fiscal year is the first fiscal year that we had that Oro Valley Marketplace revenues available, or rather we didn't have that expense, not the coming fiscal year. And in fact, we did use that revenue source for the PSPRS payment in the current fiscal year. However, I did not include that $500,000 in next fiscal year's budget because that is an ongoing dollar. And frankly, in order to mitigate against further cuts that would impact our service levels for what is, we hope, a short-term situation, it made more sense to make those future payments out of one-time revenues in our year-end excess reserves, which we have calculated. And so you see from my budget message that what I'm recommending, and we put a very generous contingency in the budget of $5 million. $4.7 million of that is excess reserves beyond the 25% of the council. I don't believe we'll need much, if any, of that contingency, but if we do, it's there. And towards the end of the fiscal year, we see that we continue to still have those resources available, then that is the perfect time before the fiscal year ends to make that, to make up that $500,000 contribution to the PSPRS or to reserve it specifically for PSPRS in the future, whatever the council's direction is. So I did not include it, and those ongoing dollars were included in the ongoing operation and not for the PSPRS. I'm looking at this. I think I addressed this. If by mid-year review or earlier sales tax revenues are below budget, what's the strategy? I think I just covered that. There's always the option for additional hiring freezes and that kind of thing. Again, the earlier we know, the easier it is to make those cutbacks. And then the last question that really is for me before I turn this over to Dave is, so any further details concerning the $5.3 million COVID distribution from the state? What I can tell you, and Dave and I are on a conference call tomorrow, is that the governor's order in terms of its distribution made it very clear that the money has to be spent on public safety. So we have to figure out how that works. But what it means is that, or what it appears that it means is that the money that we have already budgeted for public safety will now be able to be reimbursed by this by the CARES Act fund, which of course means that those resources are available for other uses. So what I am doing, and I've already let the council know, is first of all, we need to get confirmation of that. And second of all, I'll be coming back to council next week at their study session with just a general overall approach as to how I'm recommending the council consider those additional resources. There's already been conversation with council that they're aware of and interest in wanting to identify a program by which the town can assist our local businesses. And so I would, anticipate some of those resources would be used in that vein. I would also anticipate beefing up our contingency a bit more to make sure that we're fully covered, in the event there's a stronger surge in the fall, we have additional expenses. And then there's some other things that we're beginning to have an internal conversation about. So we don't quite have the details on that, as we learned about this a week ago, and we're still working on it. And the rest of the questions, I think, and again, Mr. Chairman, in keeping with your recommendation to go ahead and move through those presentations. And before you open it up for questions, if it's all right, Chairman, I'd like to go ahead and have Mr. Gebhardt answer those last few questions that were asked in advance. Okay, Dave, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Town Manager Jacobs. So the next question on our list is, it says $900,000 is budgeted to go to the capital fund. Is this amount transferred in a lump sum or on a monthly basis? Could this transfer be delayed until the mid-year review to see how sales taxes are impacted? And the answer to this question is, historically, the transfers have been done 3 times a year. So the first one would be done in October. This was, you know, this could be something that we might take a look at deferring or delaying, depending on how the first few months go with our sales tax collections. Absolutely. I don't see any issue with doing that. Certainly our, you know, we need to keep continue to fund our capital projects and especially the ones that are critical in nature that actually would save us money to accomplish versus costing us money to defer or delay those, but to the extent that we could, delay the transfers a month or two or whatever, just to get comfortable in case there was some volatility there, I wouldn't have any issue with that whatsoever. Next question says, with the new contract with Billy Casper Golf, how does this contract compare with true costs? And I think, what I can tell you at this point is the town is still in negotiations with Billy Casper, but generally speaking, because I was a part of that panel reviewing all of that, Billy Casper's financial forecasts were superior across the board from Troon's financial forecast, which was a factor in why they were selected. It wasn't the deciding factor, but it was certainly a consideration of why we went that direction. But because the contract still has not been finalized, I can't really speak to the specifics of what that looks like yet. I can just tell you that their projections, their financial forecasts were superior to Trends. Next question says, I would like to have a fund balance clarification discussion. All too often, the total fund balance amount as a percentage of general fund expenditures is compared to the 25% town council account. For example, in the 5-year projection, a total fund balance to expenditure comparison is listed as around 35%. I think this gives the impression that the delta is available for current operations. This may not be the case if there are other constraints or restrictions on fund balance amounts. For example, the $1.6 million in bed tax in the committed fund balance category. So this is an interesting question. It's a good question. I like this question. And it's spot on accurate, really, in its assessment. That's why I like it. So there are restrictions, even in the general fund, so the general fund is the kind of the primary operating fund of the town. And as we've already gone through dealt with this issue on a fund-by-fund basis, the capital fund and the general fund, really, those two funds have the least restrictions to them or the most flexibility from a town standpoint. Now, as it relates to the general fund, we do have a policy related to the bed tax. That policy states that amount is basically a committed amount by town council direction. So we have to be aware of that. We are looking at actually reducing or relaxing the restrictions on the bed tax fund monies. We can't reduce or relax them entirely. I think there's still maybe a slight restriction there, but certainly it doesn't need to be completely set aside as it has been historically. In fact, it was, I think you all are aware, maybe not, but it was actually set up as its own separate fund historically, and we made the decision to actually migrate that fund into the general fund to be more consistent with how other towns and cities have utilized those resources. So just because the town council does have a 25% policy, but just because we have a fund balance and we show like 35% available or whatever, there are different classifications of fund balance that can be problematic with utilizing those fund balances. I guess what I'd like to say in kind of wrapping this up, because I don't want to get too detailed about it, but or maybe I do, but the unassigned fund balance is really the amount that it ought to be the focus for the town in terms of its financial flexibility, because the unassigned fund balance, there are no strings attached, there are no commitments. There are other classifications with committed and assigned and restricted and even non-spendable, and all of those kind of ramp up to in terms of the restrictions or even not even being able to tap into those resources. So you, town staff, we're aware of this. Obviously, we're trying to migrate, I guess, through this recession or this pandemic as delicately as possible with preserving town services. But really the focus moving forward, once we hopefully get on the other side of this, will be to try to beef up the unassigned fund balance of the town, because the unassigned really represents something that there are no strings attached. They are available. And I believe in our last CAFR, don't quote me on this, but I believe in our last CAFR that the unassigned fund balance, you can look it up, was around $3.7 million. So, which is significant. That's much higher than what you'll find in most other cities and towns. So, and then question nine says, at what point would the $288,000 be used from the town council's contingency fund? How was the amount determined? Could other fund balance resources such as assigned, unassigned be used instead? In other words, use this emergency only if needed. And I would say absolutely. The plan for the town is to not tap into the $288,000 really at all. The town does have in its policy, fund balance utilization policy, it does state that the town wants to utilize to the extent that it can, to the extent that it's legal, utilize the fund balance amounts that are the most restrictive first and the amounts that are the least restrictive last. And that kind of makes sense. I think that's a really sound fund balance policy that the town has in place to protect the town against volatility and future issues financially. So, and then question 10, lastly, it says on page 22, are the amounts for state shared revenues town or state projections? And these are based off state projections. And again, I mentioned it earlier that our state shared revenues, what we have projected for next fiscal year and the town manager's recommended budget is still conservative to the tune of almost $147,000. We are pretty much spot on, locked in to where we need to be. And I think, I'm obviously hopeful that based upon that, we're also, we've done the due diligence and the work necessary to translate that, even to obviously be conservative in our sales tax revenues as well. I feel pretty confident that we're gonna be okay next fiscal year. So with that said, I'll open it up for any questions, additional questions or clarifications that the commission needs in relation to the questions that were submitted.
Okay, who wants to go first?
Sure, I have some questions.
Okay, John.
First, I want to be mindful that you want to let the department heads go. Now, I have some organizational questions in relation to the budget, but I only have two or three regarding to the department. Should I ask those or?
Let's go to the departments first so we can get them on their way.
Okay. Yeah, and I didn't have that many. The very well explained in the parks and recreation area, and of course I know this has been discussed. I saw it discussed last week at the council meetings. But the needs assessment and the master plan. I guess we're still trying to determine whether that's going to be done internally or in consulting. I don't need to know the pros and cons of that. That'll be handled. But what's the magnitude of the financial impact on that one alternative versus the other? I couldn't find that.
You know what, Mr. Latchford, I will start and then I'll let Christy Diaz-Trahan jump in. We have a contract with the same firm, Pros Consulting, who did the first part, the assessment part, to continue to move into the master plan part. But because of our budget cuts, we reduced the amount of money and therefore the scope of what the consultant was going to do. Now, this may be an area that I recommend to council, given that we may have some additional resources be restored. But I believe, Christy, correct me if I'm wrong, it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 70-something thousand, and we were able to fund 30. Is that correct? Somebody want to unmute Christy?
I think I'm unmuted.
There we go. You're good.
Yeah.
There we go. Okay. Yes. Thank you. Actually, Mary, you're right. The second phase was approximately 78,000. And so we reduced it 40. And so that included in there were the conceptual site plans, in addition to the scope of work that town staff were going to take on.
Okay, I got you. Well, thank you very much for that clarity. I mean, again, this will be decided by council. I just wanted to know the financial impact here. I've got you on the screen here, if I can ask a second question. I noticed in the aquatics that we're discontinuing a contract labor, and I think it's $230,000, Brad. Makes it look like that. Could you explain what that is?
Absolutely, Commissioner. So this has to do with how we collected revenues for the swim teams. And in years past, we had done a revenue share. So we collected all the revenue and then we gave them back a percentage or a shared amount. And that's where that expense comes in. What we've done is we've revisited our user fee policy. And so now they simply pay a price per lane, which is a rental fee. And that's what all of our other users provide. I mean, excuse me, that's how all of our users rent the facility.
Gotcha. You sparked a memory there. I do recall that being discussed at one of the council meetings. Yes. Okay. So that's what that relates to. And then, did I get that right? Is it $230,000 that's being reduced on the expense line, but it's also being reduced on the revenue line?
There is a significant reduction in swim team revenue. In the revenue line. However, our rental fee revenue is increasing. Again, it's just how a different way of how we're developing our fee schedule.
Okay. Thank you very much for that, Christy. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
The last question I have for departments was just in the area of police, and I see in the professional standards function that we have a reduction of about $100,000 from this year's projected results. And I was wondering, I think that's a very small function. I believe it has only one or two employees. And I was wondering where the $100,000 reduction came from. Does that ring a bell?
Good afternoon, Commissioner. Apparently I'm getting some feedback and I apologize. I'm gonna need you to repeat the question. That doesn't ring a bell to me on $100,000.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. That's all I have in terms of departmental questions on my side. I have a couple of organizational ones, but why don't I just sit and defer and see if there's any other departmental.
I have a question on how the CIP was prioritized for each of these departments.
Mr. Chairman and members of the Budget Finance Commission, we have a CIP committee that jointly does the prioritization. And so we don't, you know, the departments bring forward their their budget, or excuse me, their capital requests. But we have a cross-departmental group that then collectively, as a team, evaluates the projects. And what's really beneficial about that is it's not police against public works against parks and rec. It's what are our overall needs? What are the things that must be done? And there's a conversation that then happens at that level. And so what we have found is, again, in the grand scheme of things, the number of projects were relatively small. And so putting them in priority order, we found that it's more helpful for us in terms of our planning purposes to put them in kind of what I'll call a hierarchy. The high, the medium, and the low. And then based on the resources available, then you're not going, oh, we'll do this one, we'll just go down until we run out. Because when you find out how much money there's available, then sometimes you can get more things done by saying, well, let's do these two projects in that mid-level instead of that one big project. And so that's really what it is. And what you see in our capital process is we have three high level items and the rest of them were all mediums. We weren't able to get all of the mediums and we weren't able to get any of the low priorities. And I would tell you that every one of the requests that have been made are all legitimate requests. And with no exception, every one of the projects that is on this list is fixing something that we already own or updating it. There's nothing new on here. There's nothing fancy. This is just replacing software, replacing IT backups, repairing things, replacing 911 consoles. Nothing sexy in this batch, that's for sure. Probably the sexiest is the steam pump ranch renovation. But it's still an old building that we own that's historic that needs to be upgraded. It's not like we're building anything new.
But you've also got a baseball batting cage in there.
And the reason why, first of all, if you've ever been out to that batting cage, you'd find that it's crap. And second of all, we had a user group that's ponying up $67,000 toward that. So, that made it on the list because that's a true partnership. That's a public-private partnership that we want to take advantage of. And it's growing. Christy, jump in. I want to say from being able to accommodate one batter at a time, maybe two, to something far greater. So it was a service increase that this user group is basically paying for us. Christy, you want to jump in on that?
Okay. Yes. So currently the way it works, it's a one cage. They have it split in the middle. So there's like a little warm up area and then a shortened distance for pitching out of a machine. What we're going to do is open it up and there will be six full length bays. So that way you can have six people in a hitting lane. Or excuse me, one person each in three lanes, and then one person each in the other three lanes for a pitching catching. But they'll have these fences curtains that you can slide across, and then you can open that whole thing up, and that can be another practice facility. So that will help with some training practice, hitting off tees, just in a lot of just more athletic training that's necessary. So the league is super excited about this, and I think that, to Mary's point, this public-private partnership, we've worked with them in the past. They've helped to pay for the two large scoreboards that are out there, and that group also paid for the shade structures over the bleachers. So it's been a long-term relationship with that group.
And Mr. Chairman, when you're available, the chief has found the answer to the previous question, so she's ready answer.
Okay. Chief Riley, you answer?
Yes. Good afternoon. I believe if you're referring to the reduction. I want to say it was a reduction in patrol and an increase over the Office of Professional Standards is what you're referring to. My guess is that it was a change of staffing where I'm managing the staff different. We did not increase any of our staff. That could be what it is that I just did some reallocation of staff. So you'll see an increase in one and a decrease in the other, if that makes sense.
Gotcha. All right. Well, thank you very much, Chief. That makes sense. Yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, do you want me to continue with some additional questions here?
Yeah, do we have any specific questions for any of the department heads so that they can, we're not forcing them to sit through this thing?
They're happy to. I was just trying to be a good boss.
I'm sure they spend a lot of time at all these meetings. If they can get out, they can get out. Not hearing anything. I appreciate their being involved and available to us. I think the bulk of our questions are related to more general topics.
Team, don't say I never gave you anything. Just want y'all know, put that out there.
Okay.
Chairman Beasley, can I make a comment? I wanted to commend the directors. I thought they all did a great job with their presentations and clearly put a lot of work into this. And so that's very much appreciated.
I'll echo that too. Very good.
Support that, Kathy. Thank you.
Okay, John, you had some more questions.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, the excess contingency of $5 million that's being put into the plan, first of all, I have to commend you, Mary. That's a very smart move to do that. I can't imagine there's a CEO out there that isn't doing that right now from some company, because the contingencies are just all the unknowns that we're facing. And there's a lot of unknowns at the moment. And I recall when back in the financial recession of 07 and 08, I think that was the first thing I did with my organization is get a contingency on the books. But I was wondering, the $5 million, how did we arrive at that amount? Is there a way, could you substantiate that as to?
So last year our contingency was around just under $900,000, and we really didn't tap into it. As you can imagine, the contingency really is for general fund, and our general fund budget is $44 million. So, $5 million is a pretty generous. If we're that far off on our projections, we're not doing our job. I just don't think we're gonna get there. So. We knew that we had $4.7 million in unassigned or excess reserves beyond the 25%. And frankly, we just rounded up to an even $5 million. That's really, we said, let's budget the whole amount and let's just round it up. So if we have to get to that $288,000 in the 25%, we're all in deep trouble. If you think about the key resources and revenues that are our primary revenues to the town, which is sales taxes, right? But that's not 100% of our revenues. We have a revenue mix. We've got state shared revenues, a good chunk of them, which is income tax driven, that sort of thing. So, we'll be able to monitor on a monthly basis the trends on where our sales taxes go. That's our key indicator. And we can make some changes. What we want to be able to do, though, is, again, if things get really bad and we see some significant changes that we hadn't planned for, then we can potentially look at both cuts and use of reserves so as to mitigate significant impacts to our residents, because that's what this is about. We are a personnel-driven organization. We're a service-based organization. And I really am loath, I'm not off the table, but I'm loath to do layoffs and furloughs if we don't have to. That is something that is not, that would be my very last resort. So that means we have to manage. And I'm, you know, we looked at all of the information that was coming in from our economic sources that we had at the time. I mean, it's early, you all know that, right? And I think if you saw the information that I provided to council last Friday, all of the communities are all over the board in terms of where they're projecting their revenues. Some are way up, some are down. Every community is very, very different based on their revenues and their mix and, you know, that sort of thing. And but when our state shared revenues came in today and are still better than ours, and those are the numbers that we used in terms of making our sales tax projections, I think that you know, that makes me feel even more comfortable with our projections for next fiscal year, that they are sufficiently conservative, maybe not perfect because we can't plan everything, right? But even with our March numbers that came in, they were better than we expected. Everyone was expecting things to tank, but what's happening in many respects is we still get revenue when people order things from their house and they get delivered. So we're not losing that revenue. We're still getting that revenue and people were still buying. And if you think about our retail mix here in Oro Valley, right? Where do we get our biggest revenue from? Target, Walmart, Best Buy, you know, all of the people are still shopping there. Yes. In fact, there was that pent up, you know, hoarding shopping that was going on. And so anyway, so I feel comfortable with the 5 million, but I also don't mind putting some of that aside additionally, because we may need it the following fiscal year.
Well, I found it interesting your inventory of reaching out to your colleagues in various cities around the state. And I think the intent was to see if there was a direction that everybody was heading. And we found out that no, there isn't. They're scattering all in different directions. So there's no herd mentality, as I call it. But let me, in regards to the excess contingency, will that have any implications, whether positively or negatively, with the potential of going out to the bond market? I think it has some merit that it could really be positive, because it means that the town is really focused on knowing what their reserves are needed for, that they are there to as a stable fund to be able to keep the organization going. So I can see it as a positive, quite frankly.
I agree with you, Commissioner. And you may recall that this current fiscal year is the first year that we did not budget all of our fund balances in the total budget. So this is the first year that happened. And really, what we found in our experience is that the bonding agencies like of Standard & Poor's, they look at such a wide variety of things. They're looking at our total savings, not how much we included in contingency, although I think it would bode well for us. The fact that we have 25% and then some, and we have healthy reserves in our others, particularly water, you know, that was the last bonding that we went out to, was for our water utility. And we have no other financing on the horizon at this point. Right. We probably will have to do some water utility financing in another year or two, you know, because what we do is we try to keep our rates stable so we don't get the rate shock. So we save up money and then we use it and we we borrow some money. So the good news is that we get to keep our good bond rating until we go back out. And right now I don't see any financing on the horizon.
Okay, thank you for that. That's I think we're in agreement there, hopefully we won't really need it, but that's a hope, not a promise.
Fingers crossed. That's right.
I happen to be looking at the 5-year forecast that was put together, and it's interesting to read that the The way it was structured this time was that we had to be mindful of the council policy not to exceed the 25% reserve ratio to general fund expenditures. And I understand that and everything. But it was interesting that when you looked at the five-year forecast that went out to that, it only allowed us to increase our expenditures annually by about 2.75%. And that's a mathematical computation, I know that. But it is telling us that we really are going to have to encounter penalties going forward here. 2.75% is not much. And I wonder how that, I'm not asking for an answer right now, but it would be interesting to see how that matches up with the council's strategic plan, you know, what they want to accomplish. Because if your forecast, I know we're always conservative, saying that we can't increase our expenditures by more than 2.75% to maintain our council policy, it probably would be well to know that going forward with what the strategic plan. So it's probably more of a comment than a question. Real quickly, the merit and step increases. I know that gained some attention at the council level, and I know that we're all a little fuzzy about how we're going to come out and what will the labor market look like. What to you and to your team there do you feel needs to be the things we need to be looking at to implement these programs? What metrics are you looking at? What's the hot spot for you?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Letchford. What it seems to be the standard in most of the communities is a suspension of the merit and steps for this coming fiscal year. Now, what the council always has the opportunity to do, and I certainly would be the first one to go back, say mid-year or springtime or whatever, hey, things are looking good. Maybe this could be a good time to do a market adjustment, you know, that kind of thing. But in terms of putting it in our recommended base budget, it didn't pencil out. And more importantly, we need to look beyond, since we don't know how long this COVID impact is going to be on our revenues. We need to look not just at next fiscal year, but we need to look at the following and, you know, the way that it just kind of compounds on each other. So it absolutely is a priority. It's a priority of mine. It's a priority of the council. We want to attract and retain qualified people in the organization. I also will tell you that our employees are very understanding at this point. They get it. They know that things are challenging. And during the Great Recession, there was at least 2 and possibly 3 years where there were no merit and step increases given to employees. And in fact, our union, our bargaining unit, understood and signed off on a one-year contract that said, hey, we get it, no increases, but if you can, just make sure everybody gets the same thing, which would be exactly my intent. So, you know, this really is a revenue issue more than anything else, but if we start seeing, impacts in terms of trends, obviously we can revisit it. Typically what happens in a downturn is your retention rate is a little bit higher and, you know, people aren't out looking for jobs or aren't as many jobs available. People understand that, you know, that they're glad to have a job, that kind of thing. And so I think that we'll see a low turnover this year, but that may not last and we need to be prepared. So it will continue to be a priority of mine. And as soon as we can afford to do that, it will be a recommendation to council that we make an adjustment.
So so I'm carrying away the thought that really it is going to be a financial determination. It really has to be, and it's going to be often dependent upon how our revenues are being generated. And my last question has to do with the capital projects, and again, falls under the forecast there. And it's a 10-year forecast, and I realize that once you get past year five, you're sort of in the crystal ball phase and trying to understand. But I noticed that it came up with $89 million over 10 years, and that may not ever be the case. Who knows what will be 5 years from now, but and maybe just as much as a question for you, Mary, as it is for Dave, is that, well, I don't know what $89 million means to the organization. That's probably my lack of education on it and everything, but how much is much? When do we get to be concerned that $89 million maybe is too much or maybe not enough? Where we have to really be attentive to the bonding and to the financing and everything. So I don't know if we ever take a look at that, but looking at really where is our limit, where is the amount that we can afford to put out there? And if so, what's the cost going to be? That you can get pretty involved, I understand that, but we have half the puzzle. To me, I can't figure out what is right. I couldn't tell you if $89 million is even close. I mean, I have no idea. So that's something that has had discussion in the organization.
You know, I would say, Commissioner, that it is our responsibility. We own a lot of assets, hundreds of millions of dollars in assets in the town. There's a lot of things that need to be done to either plan for growth or maintain the assets that we have. And so what we try to do, and you're right, it changes, because we're not going to spend a lot of time doing cost estimates for projects that are 5 years away. We're doing our best estimate today. Could be different. There could be new technology. Could be lots of things. But we do need to at least acknowledge what those costs could be. And then you're right. We may get, as we go year to year, to say, okay, we can't do new things. All we can do is fix and maintain what we have. Now, one of the things, and you mentioned this on a comment at looking at the five-year forecast, that does not include annexations. You know, there may be some opportunities to see our revenues improve and grow with, for example, you probably have read in the paper how the new owners of the Oro Valley Marketplace have new plans and ideas. If those come to fruition, that could change those revenues at that plaza pretty significantly. If in fact their plan gets through and they do add a couple of hotels and those hotels generate revenue, then we're talking about a different. So that's why, to me, I know you said, you know, oh, after 5 years, it's great. To me, after 2 years, it's a pretty good, you know, swag at that point, because a lot changes over 2 years. So we would go through, and remember, out of that $89 million, a lot of that is water. Water has their own fund source. We also have to do a 10-year plan for our impact fees called an infrastructure improvement plan. So we identify what those are, but we have a fund source in order to pay for that. So it's not all general fund money. It's water money. It's impact fee money. And so all of that kind of added together. My recommendation to you is focus on the first year, because everything changes from year to year.
Yeah, I think my point wasn't trying to get it tied down to the 10 years or even the 1 year. It was, we know what we need to do over the next year, and that's what we have to focus on, execution. I was just trying to determine what is the capabilities of the organization going forward. Don't need to have that answer tonight.
Got it.
Probably pointing at David, well, you know, that would be a great analysis to look at some point. If you'd like to know what is the capability of the organization. Anyway, enough on that. Mr. Chairman, I've completed my questions, and plan to turn it over to you, and you can allow others to ask.
Okay. Kathy?
I just have a couple questions for Mary. The first one has to do with the CARES Act funding, additional $5.3 million. I know you don't know, you're still working on understanding all of the implications of that. But my question is, Will that increase the budget, the expenditure line on the budget of that amount, or will it defray other, you know, how's that, is going to be a bump up to the bottom line, and how will you then allocate that?
So the first question is, I will be recommending to council that they increase the budget cap by $4.3 million. The reason why not 5.3 is because I've already included $1 million of capacity in the general administration fund for what we thought would have been reimbursement from the county. Now that we're getting money from the state instead, then yes, I will recommend that the cap go up by that 4.3. In terms of allocation, that's where I can't tell you at this point, where would that be? But as I mentioned, it appears that what it will basically end up showing up is as another revenue source, which will give us capacity to allocate in different areas. So okay.
You'll allocate the entire 4.3 million?
No, I wouldn't do that. Yeah.
Okay.
I think we still need to be conservative and set some money aside. And I do think that it gives some opportunities to mm-hmm. help businesses, maybe to fund some things that we weren't able to, you know, to do. But I don't want to do things quite yet that will result in ongoing costs for the following fiscal year.
Got it.
I want to be very careful about that, but you know, we might be able to reserve some of those funds for certain uses and wait until we see how things are going.
Do we have any expenses that are sort of short-term expenses as a result of COVID that would make sense to use this funding to cover for that maybe are not going to be permanently in your budget?
Absolutely. And so I will definitely be putting some of that money in the general administration for reimbursement to departments of things like additional PPE and additional right. hand sanitizer right. and cleaners right. and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So we were originally expecting to work with the county on some reimbursements, and they were going to reimburse us for, you know, for example, we were talking about the potential reimbursement of the employee use of COVID leave. That was a federal requirement in the CARES Act that said we had to provide our employees up to 80 hours of use under certain conditions if they were impacted by COVID. Whole long thing, you don't even need to know. But we did have employees tapping into that leave. That's in addition to their sick leave and their vacation. And so we were prepared to ask for reimbursement for that.
Okay.
But now we're not allowed to get duplicated resources. So we can't get the county and the state.
Right.
We have to pick one.
Okay.
And the county didn't offer $5 million. so you know, this is clearly the better direction. And there's a possibility that additional resources could be made available to cities and towns. For example, the state of Texas allocated 45% of the money that went to the state to the cities and towns who were not direct recipients. Governor Ducey has allocated about 22%. So, you know, if there are additional costs, I would not be surprised if communities got together and counties, because the only direct recipient counties were Maricopa and Pima. All the rest of the 11 counties who are doing public health and all that kind of stuff, they were getting nothing. And they may end up going back asking for additional resources as well. So we could get some additional, but I'm not banking on it.
Okay. Thank you. I had another question about kind of the revenue issue. Obviously, this is new territory for us. We don't know what's going to happen. We're doing our best to budget under these circumstances. My question is, do you have any either a dollar value or percentage of if you're up or down, you'll use that point in time to make decisions either to reverse or slow down expenses, or conversely, if, for example, the Oro Valley Marketplace takes off and somehow our revenues are, you know, through the roof, then go ahead and put in those step increases and so forth? Are there, have you identified any dollar value limitations, you know, over or under, where you'll make some changes?
Not yet. I think that what we'll, you know, kind of do again on a monthly basis is start looking for trends and looking at that. The sooner the better in terms of where we need to start cutting. Mm-hmm. If we saw some concerning trends, I think you could count on us making some changes early on in the process. Okay. And doing some early projections. So, but no, we haven't really sat down and kind of put a number to it just yet. Okay. We've just been trying to get the budget done.
Understandable. Hey, on the sales tax, you mentioned Target and Walmart, but I know we're big Amazon shoppers. I assume, I think we've talked about this in the past, that all of those trucks driving around, we're going to be getting some sales tax revenue.
We do indeed, which is why I don't feel guilty shopping on Amazon.
Right. Is that lagged at all, or is that have they got a good process for getting that quickly, or is it lagged because it's not?
It's all lagged at the same right. level, which is March collection. You know, March collections are paid at the end of April. Mm-hmm. Okay. For everybody. So okay. That's across the board. That's for bed tax. That's for retail, all that good stuff.
Okay.
And Amazon is no different, or any of their vendors.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Do you have any questions?
Just a couple small ones. You said you have a placeholder for the new golf contractor. What's the amount of that?
Basically, what we did, Commissioner Mason, is we took the current fiscal year budget and we put it as a placeholder for the next fiscal year budget. We are planning to present the Community Center Fund to the council next Wednesday, so I hope you'll dial in and we'll circle back with the Budget and Finance Commission. We're working with Billy Casper Golf right now on their new projections so that we can make those refinements forward.
Okay, thank you. And just one small thing. You're obviously in the general fund, your FY21 budget is less than the budget for FY20, but I noticed in the community service fund, the FY21 budget is for sales tax is higher by a small amount. Is there something going on there, or is...
If I may ask Wendy Gomez to weigh in on that, because she and I had a little conversation about why. It's because basically in a nutshell, it's just one little slice of the sales taxes, whereas sure, the rest sure. of our sales taxes are broader. But Wendy, if you want to chime in on that, please.
Sure. Am I unmuted or?
You are.
There we go. Awesome. Can everyone hear me?
We hear you.
Okay. Yeah, it just has to do with the categories that are going into the Community Center Fund versus the general fund. The biggest impact regarding that increase is remote sellers. So the activity that we're seeing from, you know, not Amazon specifically, but all the other remote activity. Now with that new legislation, we're seeing all those collections. And that particular category has really jumped significantly higher than we thought it would be. And obviously, the half cent is calculated off of that category. And so, you know, that's playing into it. And also the fact that bed taxes, for example, you know, those we don't have the half cent pulling off of that at all. And that's one category of sales tax that we projected would decline pretty significantly. And so obviously the half cent that's going into the Community Center Fund wouldn't be affected by that decline at all, because none of that half cent is placed on that category, if that makes sense.
So are you saying the additional half cent that goes to the community center, there's different pieces of sales tax in there that's not in the sales tax that the general fund would get?
Other way around.
Well, for example, yeah, the other way around, yes. The rate, like construction sales tax, for example, that's 4%, utility tax, 4%, And then the bed tax, 6%, you know, none of that is shaved off for a half cent into the community center fund. It's really just our other retail rates and everything that's typically at 2.5%.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Anybody else have any questions?
Mr. Chair, I have one more question.
Fire away.
And this is for David. And so I was struck by your presentation the other night, David, to the council. And you told them that we have a structurally unbalanced budget. And it's unbalanced by approximately $700,000. What are the implications of that? That's the first time I've heard that presented. And you brought it up, so I'm wondering, is that something we need to really concern ourselves with? Is that something we need a policy on? Just as a metric that hadn't been presented before?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, I think that's another good question. I think absolutely we need to be concerned about it, frankly. You know, the idea is that you try to balance all your ongoing revenues with all your ongoing expenditures. And to the extent that your ongoing expenditures outpace your ongoing revenues, that's a problem. That's what's considered a structurally unbalanced budget. And that's something that we need to look at moving forward to try to recalibrate and rebalance that. Now, with that said, because the town is in such an enviable financial position with its reserves, $700,000 in 1 year is not going to cause any sort of financial heartache or problems for the town. You know, truthfully, we need to look at this in the larger context of the $2.5 or $2.3 million amount that we're budgeting as a planned use of reserves. But moving forward, this is something that the town will need to address, because you can only spend those reserves down for so long, and then you don't have reserves anymore to spend down. And so that it is something that that's on my radar. It's something that we need to address at some point. I don't know that now's the proper year to address it because of the pandemic. But moving forward in future years, we will want to recalibrate that and keep our eye on it to make sure that that we have a structurally balanced budget and we sustain the town moving forward into future fiscal years. You know, that we're not continually, that our operational or ongoing expenses continually exceed our operating or ongoing revenues. So hope that answers the question.
No.
And I'll just jump in with our CFO and indicate again, because I agree with him. We've been in a great position. This fiscal year happens to be one where we're having to spend one-time dollars for ongoing costs because this is a crisis. But this is also a crisis that will end. And so I feel very confident that, you know, the 1 or maybe 2 years that we may need to supplement in order to mitigate impacts to the community as far as our service levels, given our financial strength, are warranted. And, you know, I was talking to a colleague of mine who said, you know, I'm not sure we could have a rainier day for use of our rainy day fund. You know, this is a pretty rainy day. And so, you know, by using this, that's what we planned for, right? Just like you do with the savings, you know, savings account that you have. Your roof goes bad and you need to spend it and you've saved it up. You can do that and then you replenish that and you get back to your, you know, your day-to-day operation. So I'm confident that we will get there, you know, and we'll take all the steps that are necessary in order to, you know, put that couple year plan together to get to that structural balance for our budget. That's essential. And frankly, it's also a town council financial policy, and we will achieve it.
And I'd like to jump in and add one more comment here just to wrap it up. just because that's what the budget shows doesn't mean that that's what's going to happen in reality. And truthfully, the actual results of fund balance, what happens at the end of the year after we reconcile all of our revenues and all of our expenditures, because we're so conservative on the revenue side in terms of budgeting less, and also conservative on the expenditure side of budgeting more, that can kind of create that unbalance as well. So, you know, again, this is what we've done historically has worked. It's put us in the position that we're in to get us to where we are at today in terms of building our reserves. It's been effective. It's something that I want to keep my eye on. I think we need to keep our eye on as a town, but realistically, to me, the budget, yeah, it's important. I don't want to underestimate or undersell what the importance of the budget is, but the CAFR, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, that produces actual versus budget information, and shows us what our actual fund balances are at the end of the year after we've closed out our fiscal year, is actually, to me, more meaningful, because that's real. The budget is a projection and a forecast, obviously, and the CAFR is what actually happened historically. So,
thank you very much. Good to know that. And that's really good information to have. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I think I am finished.
Okay, any other questions? All right, thank you very much. I don't think there's any action on our part as far as the budget is concerned at this point. So.
And Mr. Chairman, we did plan for another meeting for you on Thursday morning at 9 a.m. So that can be a time that the commission may want to take a position or pass a motion or that sort of thing. So it will be prepared and ready for you to have that meeting.
What is the date on that one?
Thursday.
This coming Thursday.
Mm-hmm. The council requested your input prior to June the 10th. So we've penciled in a meeting on Thursday morning at 9 a.m. Isn't that right, Dave?
That's correct.
Yes.
Only if necessary.
Only, right, if necessary.
Okay, we've got it noted, so I'm assuming that's going to be another Zoom.
It is indeed our favorite.
Okay, good. Well, so far, so good. Okay. Shall we attack the pension funding policy?
Sure, so I'll jump in here, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. Included in your packet this evening is a proposed pension funding policy. Of course, I'm kind of jumping into this midstream here, but as I understand it, the policy that's before you this evening is a policy that you have seen. I have not made any changes to it. And if I'm wrong on that, I apologize, but I'm not apologizing about not making any changes. Apologize with whether you've seen it or not, just to be clear. The pension funding policy includes, you know, includes the intent of the town to continue to pay $500,000 in the future and future budget years. That capacity exists, as we've noted earlier this evening, in the town manager's recommended budget that was presented to council, we did not include that $500,000. I think, and I don't want to speak out of turn here, but I think it's pretty safe to assume that may be, probably likely will be loaded in to the tentative budget, given some of the changes that have been coming forth with the CARES Act funding, et cetera. So with that, I did include a fairly comprehensive memoranda there for you to read, and I would be more than happy to answer any questions that you have on the policy. Thank you.
Okay, let me jump in here. We did review this in May. And we had a fairly substantial discussion in terms of the policy itself and a number of things that various commissioners jumped in on. I've made some notes on the March discussion, and quite honestly, none of that got into the funding policy. And I understand you're new to us at that point, so you didn't have the opportunity of seeing that, Dave, but I think there are a number of fairly meaty things in this that quite frankly disturbed me, and I'm obviously going to allow all the rest of the commissioners to and also, but I think I'm going to start it out if I can. One of the things that we talked about last time around was we have a target for 100% funding in this thing at June 30, 2036. But we have no interim funding targets. And Kathy, I think this is something that you brought up, which I think is really a great idea, because given the history of this thing, where we have had a steady progression of rising unfunded pension liability, that this thing is not going to get solved with investment returns. It's going to get solved with throwing money into the plan. So I think we need to have some targets in here. And the target just isn't going from the current funding level to 100% by June 30, 2036. So the suggestion was that we pick some interim dates and pick some targets at that point in time. And the targets can be in a couple of different ways. The targets could be funding percentages, and the targets can be dollars of unfunded liabilities. And I think, Kathy, and maybe you can jump in too, I think we were looking at 2024, 2028, 2032, and then finally 2036, where the plan is fully funded. What do you think?
I agree that you need to put in some points in time where you're gonna have some obligations to make. Otherwise, I'm afraid I agree with you that the last year you're going to go out of business because you're going to have to pay it all off if you don't put some kind of structure in for review and making sure that we kind of really start paying it down. I mean, I know this is a tough year to talk about adding anything else, but I think just even having, I think having the conversations and the understanding and having discussions so that there's understanding about how this works rather than wait until even the halfway point comes about and then, well, why don't we know about this? I think for me that would be kind of step one, right, is understanding the situation and kind of looking at, I think to your point, unless the economy really comes hurling back, the only way we're going to get this paid down is chiseling away and putting in an additional amount of funding every year. I don't know that any of us see any other way of paying that down.
I guess I'd like to suggest that as one takes a look at the reports of what the unfunded liability is at the current actuarial interest rate, which the portfolio has not returned in a long time. Gone from about $12.9 million of unfunded liability in 2015 to about $23.6 million as of June 30, 2019. So we've had this steady deterioration, and quite honestly, the $500,000 that we're talking about for last year and potentially this year doesn't even begin to address what's necessary. And if you took the actuarial information that's in footnote 17 of your CAFR, that would look at a 1% change to the assumed discount rate that the actuary might use. That rate today, or actually as of June 30, since we don't have a current number, go from 23.6 million to 32.3 million. So the realistic interest rate assumption is that in current market conditions, current interest rate scenarios, the actual number of dollars that have to be addressed are quite enormous. And that's just for the police plan and doesn't even consider what it is in the other plan. So I think the city has to get realistic about doing funding. So I think this interim target situation is important. It's got to go into this funding policy.
I would think, because that was the comment that I know that Mary addressed earlier when she was discussing the questions we submitted. Going back to that Oro Valley marketplace, you know, it said in your letter that FY20 was the first year that Oro Valley got a full 100% of the sales tax versus 60%. So the city is used to being without that 40% delta there. I guess the $750,000 estimate, was that an FY20 estimate or an FY21 estimate?
The 750 was a 20.
Okay, so, and 20 was a fairly average year, probably lower than what you anticipate. So I guess what I'm kind of thinking is, you know, one of the options that we kind of went through when we were looking at is that, you know, all these various options for funding this unfunded liability, but having a kind of dedicated revenue source could really help out. Now I'm talking about after pandemic gets dealt with. Obviously now you have to deal with what's happening now instead of, you know, 10, 20 years down the road. So instead, I know putting metrics to look at, but even trying to come up with something down to 24, 20, that's still a long way away. And we're going to look at this policy on an annual basis. So we
correct
that every year to see where we stand. And so to me, if we could have that revenue source dedicated, either we could, if we want to make a minimum payment of $500,000 at the beginning of the fiscal year, and if we can make additional later on, that's fine. But if we can, we could also, on top of that, that 40% delta, we could put in a fund balance category to let it accumulate if we, you know, where we can actually use that, and maybe we can make more than $500,000 a year every year because of this revenue source coming in, actually looking at it every year. If it turns out that we have problems and we can't use it, then, you know, then we make that determination there. But I think having that dedicated revenue source as part of the policy, it kind of gives us puts us in a pretty good position to put that additional funding, and we could come up with the amount, you know, each year that we look at it, depending on how sales tax are going and how, you know, that money is out there. So that looks to me to be kind of a would be my suggestion to this is that having that additional revenue source that we can actually look at and apply on a maybe a more consistent basis, you know, once the pandemic is over with, that will go, then we can start seeing how that impacts the contribution rate that we get every year, because our objective was to get at a contribution rate that we could keep the same every year. And by doing that, even if our contribution rate is obviously higher than maybe what's required because we've made these additional payments, then we get to the point where we don't have to make additional payments because we're starting to cover that underfunded liability in much bigger chunks than by adding this additional money. So I'm kind of looking at, is there a way that we can put that dedicated funding source as part of our policy and then keep looking at it on an annual basis? And that, in a sense, we're looking at it sooner than these years on down the line. Just my thoughts on it.
Kai, do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, I think that I have I'm sort of torn between, you know, which way is the best approach to recommend here. Given all of the uncertainty we're dealing with right now, I think having a policy that's as flexible as possible is the best way to go. Now, you're indicating that we should probably put some benchmark performances into the policy. How would those be determined? I mean, where would we come up with the benchmarks that would make sense? If I'm sitting on the council next year after an election, somebody who hasn't had this benefit or who has, the flexibility may be greatly appreciated at the time. I was looking at the policy that David was putting out, and one of the heartburns I had was where we said at least $500,000. And, you know, with where we are at the moment, with all of the uncertainty, I was going to recommend we strike at least, because the council may, under their own direction and decision making, decide that, with everything being considered, that $500,000 is not doable. Maybe we should do more, maybe we should do less. But back to your discussion point, Jim, is that how do we come up with these benchmarks? I mean, and of course, the policy is reviewed every year. Do the benchmarks need to be in the policy? Or could they be a part of the operational manual for the town, provide that information to the council and the commission annual? So, you know, once it gets into policy, it does become a fixture, and it makes, in this day and age, could make it a little bit inflexible.
I think that's one of the things that we sort of talked about before, which is why we would be looking out in 4 to 5 year kinds of increments rather than try to pin it down on a year by year basis.
Right. Okay. But still somewhere, what are those benchmarks?
Yeah.
What creates those benchmarks that make sense? I don't know if anybody's developed that.
Because I think once we can make, you know, payments maybe a couple, 2 or 3 years in a row, which we haven't been able to do, that gives us a better look at how we're gaining, you know, because while we're putting money, additional money in it, you know, the assumptions could be changing too, which counteracts whatever additional payment we did or, you know, or vice versa. So I think, you know, looking at it annually is certainly more current than a 5 year, because basically you looked at it five times by the time we got to that particular place. But I just think having the ability to put money and having a, that source of revenue to put down on a consistent basis. And, you know, and also maybe we increase the amount because we have, we've had a good year that year and we can afford to do so. So, again, I guess that's my thought. Trying to keep the policy somewhat flexible and simple because, you know, it's pretty much hard to project what the contribution rate is next year, let alone or it could be 5 or 6 years from now, not knowing what assumptions could be changed by the PSPRS board. They could be changing assumptions on us every few years, which obviously would make our any kind of projection we made off because of the assumption changes.
And what they're likely to do is to reduce the interest rate assumption, which will increase those liabilities.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, when you're ready, I have the Word document in front of you, and I'd like to, if I may, because Zoom calls are very challenging, to, if you all have the policy in front of you, if we can just walk paragraph by paragraph through, and then if you have any suggested changes, I'll do a track changes on that so that you have a final document that perhaps you can consider, if not tonight, then on Tuesday, or excuse me, Thursday, and we could send it to you with those changes. So you know, at your discretion, Mr. Chairman.
You know, maybe the thing to do is to continue our discussion of things that we'd like to see in this document or general changes we'd like to see, and then have staff craft those changes and then send those out to us for discussion version, rather than us try to go word by word at this point.
That's fine. I would be happy to do that. But if we could still go through each of the sections so that I have an idea as to your comfort level of or not, that would be helpful because I'm not sure that I feel that I have a good direction from the group at this point. So you're right. We don't have to craft it. We can come back to you with a track changes version. But just to have the conversation about the different sections would be very helpful to me.
Okay, yeah, we can do that, certainly.
All right, so let's start with, you know, I think there's probably that first part that won't have any changes, but I just wanna run through, you all have identified that this is something that is required by state statute to be revisited and readopted by council every year. So they have no choice. It's something that they have to do, and that first paragraph very clearly just identifies that. And then the definitions, I assume everyone's good with the definitions. We don't have to read those, and I don't plan to do that.
The only problem I have with the definitions area is the funded ratio. That funded ratio is dictated by whatever interest rate assumption is utilized. And that's a moving target.
True, but the funded ratio is a number that we get from PSPRS and we have no control over it. It is simply the ratio, right, whether we like it or not.
Right, but PSPRS also gives you the option of throwing additional money into the plan and will show you what the value is of throwing in $1,000,000, $2,000,000, $3,000,000, $5,000,000, $10,000,000. And your own footnotes on the balance sheet will show you what the impact is of changing the assumed interest rates. I think we need to be careful with this question of funded ratio.
This is just a definition of what, if somebody asks, what is a funded ratio? It is a ratio of fund assets to actuarial accrued liability. Does anybody disagree with that? Not the way that it's calculated, but what it is. That's the definition. A ratio of fund assets to actuarial accrued liability. The higher the ratio, the better funded the pension is, with 100% being fully funded. Is that wrong?
It's just supposed to be a general definition is all.
It's a definition. It is not a statement. Yeah. It's not a policy statement. It is simply a definition. Is it wrong?
No.
No, I think it's fine.
Okay. All right. The next, going down to PSPRS, we start there on the bottom of page one. It's really just information on, and again, you all may recall from last year's conversation, this is a model policy that probably 90% of the communities across the state of Arizona are using. This is nothing fancy. It is basic. It was developed by the League of Arizona Cities and Towns. And so that was our model with a few adjustments that were recommended by the Budget and Finance Commission, which were incorporated in the version that you have in front of you. So it's just a description. What is PSPRS? Or, you know, again, that's not a policy. That's simply a statement. At the top of page two, again, more description as to how the plan operates and the fact that the town also contributes to the corp and how they're administered. So really up until we get to, and the fact that the council formally accepts the assets and ratios, which are restated below. So we get to the, all the way through to the middle of page two, where we talk, where those are just the facts, the assets, the accrued liability, the actuarial accrued life, and the funded ratio. And again, that comes from the PSPRS. That is, those are not our numbers, those are their numbers.
This is where I think we should start making some changes. I think we need to show what the liabilities are over more than just a one-year time frame, so that people have an understanding as to what we're trying to do here and address the liabilities. And because we're talking about future targets, we really want to stop the growth of those liabilities. Because ultimately, the town has a growing liability that it has to address. And ultimately, things like rating agencies, et cetera, are going to spend more time on addressing these liabilities. So let's get out what these liabilities are and for informational purposes, all it's for.
And Mr. Chairman, I don't disagree with your approach, but a policy is not an informational document. A policy is a policy.
Then why do we have this in here?
Because it's setting the foundation for what is the policy, which is the funding goal. And I think what you're talking about in terms of targets, I think it belongs in the funding goal, but the information here in terms of the assets, liability, and the funded ratio, that is strictly from the state. That's what they tell us that we owe. And we have, that is a determination that they get to make.
Well, the actuary is telling you that, not the state, but
the actuary through the state, yes.
Right, but in any case, that is just pure information. So what's wrong with providing multi-year information in that area so that people understand where you've been, and then ultimately, as we get further down, where you're going.
So what are you recommending?
What I'm recommending is that we show several years worth of these assets and liabilities so that people can see what those funded ratios have been, because the policy is going to show a direction as to where we have to get to.
Okay, so I'm sorry, I misunderstood. You want to show like the past 5 years funded ratio?
Correct.
Okay, how do the rest of you feel about that?
This is just a historical recap of what has occurred.
I think the value in that to me is showing that, you know, is it, if we've been paying $500,000 a year for several years and the liability is still growing, then the result might be you think, well, we got to pay more than that. So I don't know. There's maybe value in that, whether that belongs in the policy or not. I don't know that. To me, that would be something that I would think you should look at just for your analysis of what's the right amount of money to be putting down.
So. Well, I could see where it might have some value to a reader who is for the first time becoming knowledgeable about this. But, you know, that again, I agree with you, Kathy. I'm not sure. Put it into a policy and what does it do? What will the impact be to the policy? So you could put it in as an appendix, you know, just to say, hey, you know.
Well, what, maybe you put it in, maybe you add a sentence that says, where it says, you know, what you're reviewing, that you review the past X number of years.
Yeah, say past year's performance or past year's impact.
I mean, I think you'd want to look at performance. You'd want to look at, you know, how is the liability growing and are we keeping up with it? Like I said, I'm not sure that has to be in the policy, but maybe direction that it needs to be reviewed could be in the policy.
Well, it's going to get, well, you know, we're always going to get reviewed every year.
No, but the history is reviewed because that gives you context in terms of are you making progress or not.
So if you put that information into the policy, it really is just information only, you're saying. It's not going to have an impact on the policy. It's not going to say, hey, do this or that. That really gets back to your benchmarking, and I think that's what we have to distinguish.
If I may jump in here, Commission, I am certainly not opposed. If you know anything about me, my career, my history, I am not opposed to providing more information and being fully transparent on anything. My life is an open book, and I run my professional life really the same way. So, but there's challenges here. It's not necessarily a challenge. It's just something for consideration with including the historical liabilities, the historical performance of assets, certainly the historical unfunded actuarial accrued liability and the historical funded ratios. And that challenge is that they are just numbers in time. And those numbers in time were under, and I feel safe in saying this, were under circumstances really completely different in terms of how the plan was administered, the actuary that was utilized, the assumptions that were used, et cetera. I mean, I think, you know, pension plans can be fairly simplistic to understand, but in terms of public pension plans, they also can be fairly complex in terms of the details that are driving the information. And so, as Chairman Beasley noted, if you change the earnings rate of the plan, that has a really significant impact on what you show as your unfunded actuarial accrued liability. And we know that those changes have taken place. But if you're just reading the policy and you're looking at the numbers, you're not necessarily going to be able to connect that without digging in and doing some research with the PSPRS plan itself, going online and doing your own research. And at that point, if we do include all those changes in assumptions and changes in actuaries, et cetera, then this policy really almost becomes unruly in terms of it expanding into something that is much more complex than really it's designed to be. So I don't know if that makes sense. I'm certainly not trying to push back against the idea. It's just a consideration.
I think what we're trying to get at is that the town has an unfunded pension liability that needs to be taken care of. The unfunded liability is determined by a whole bunch of moving pieces. That's always going to be the case, whether you do it yourself or you hire 20 actuaries to do it, it's always going to be the same issue. Okay? What this does, this policy is designed to do, is to tell you where you're at, where you're going to go, how are you going to get, and elevate the issue of pension liabilities into the realm of other types of expenditures that the town has. If you want to fund your pension funds, you have to recognize that you've got that liability and do something about it. You can't just kick it down the road because that liability will continue to grow. You're not going to earn your way out of this pension plan. You've got to fund it. So that's what we're trying to get at.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with everything that you just said. I think there have been, you know, if the plan was sustainable in its original intent, in its original form, then we wouldn't have added tier three, then we wouldn't have added tier two. We would have just stuck with tier one. The fact that we have, that the plan and that the legislature has now really morphed this thing and really rolled back benefits show the unsustainability of the original design of the plan to begin with. And I would say that ultimately, we will get wrap our arms around this as tier one. Now, this is obviously out in the future, but as tier one and tier two, those employees roll off of the plan, at some point, we will be stuck with, it's going to be decades, but we'll be stuck with that subset that's tier three, and that liability will be significantly less because the benefits are less. The tier three doesn't have the drop. They don't have, they can't retire after 20 years. They have to wait 30. So there are certain things that the plan will naturally take care of over time, as long as we keep paying the ARC, and as long as we keep continuing to try to chip away and pay, make additional contributions over time. I don't disagree with any of that.
See, that's the key, is having to pay those additional contributions, because we've tried the tack to paying just what the required contributions are per the actuary, and it doesn't work because you're not earning what those interest rate assumptions are. You're not getting close.
Agreed. You'll get no disagreement from me.
And now you know why corporations don't have defined benefit plans.
Right. No, that you're absolutely right, Mr. Chairman. Absolutely. You'll get no disagreement with me on any of that. You know, I think the other thing for the commission to keep in mind and for the public to keep in mind, just generally speaking, and I'll speak to Commissioner Salverson's comment earlier. Just because the target says 2036, you know, if we're not completely 100% funded by 2036, the town is not going to shut down its operations. You know, this is really establishing a target to be 100% funded. If it goes to 2037, I mean, certainly that's not what we want to do. That's why we established the policy and the target to begin with, right? But if it goes into 2037 or 2038 before it's 100% funded, then that's not the end of the world for the town. The town's not going to cease operations. It's not going to have to pay that entire liability balance in one fell swoop in one fiscal year. So, and even beyond that, I think I just need to state, there will not be a public safety officer that's a part of this plan that will not be, that will not get their benefits, what has been promised to them, what they worked so hard to do in providing service to our community. They will be paid what has been promised to them. The courts have been very strong about that issue, not only in Arizona, but in other states where that issue has been challenged at the legal level, in preserving public benefits, not just for public safety, but even public employee benefits in the aggregate. So the plan.
I don't think anyone is questioning that, Dave. I think the question, though, is, we do have something in here about intergenerational impact. Mm-hmm. So what we don't want to do is push this all forward onto a different group of people. So it's got to start now, and we just simply have to do the funding.
Here's the question. Is there any disagreement on putting in the policy a dedicated funding source? And, you know, we could, you know, either have put that in there, and then if you could also put in, if you wanted to have an additional reserve to put money in if we don't make a payment for whatever reason. I think having a dedicated revenue source that we kind of have because of the marketplace gives us something that we're doing and resources that we're putting in, and we're pretty much saying we're going to put additional resources in every year unless there is some other recession or something pops in, and that's the reason that we look at it annually. So that gives mayor and council that option of not making a payment or changing it because of some other, you know, reason. But to me, having that dedicated revenue source in there is showing our willingness and our, you know, that we are going to put additional payments in there, you know, unless something dramatic happens to the budget.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. And it goes hand in hand with what other municipalities have also been doing. Prescott, as an example, has put in its special sales tax just funded.
Yeah, we could
encourage that, but
if there's a maximum that we want to put as an amount that we pay, or we could say, you know, at least 500,000 and leaves us the ability to put in more, you know, if it gets budgeted, you know, as part of the budget. So, you know, that wording could be, you know, here's our dedicated revenue source of this amount on an annual basis or something like that. So I guess that just keeps it kind of simple in the policy without putting in a lot of this other targets. I mean, obviously we're going to be looking at those targets as we go every year. And, but it just seems to me it keeps it simple, concise. And if there's no disagreement with throwing that revenue source in there, that kind of, I think helps the situation immensely.
I don't have an issue with regard to how we do it, if it's a dedicated revenue source. I just feel like it needs to be a line item every year on the budget.
And, you know, it has to be to make payments. So it has to be, you know, or that, or and maybe having that resource, that revenue source there allows it to be, you know, a budgeted line item every year because we have this revenue coming in, and you can determine the payment based on how that revenue source is going.
I feel like it's with the word, it's, we're getting the benefit. The officers working now, you know, my kids in 20 years shouldn't have to be paying for that. We should be paying for that. That, you know, so when you're matching up time periods of, you know, that causal beneficial relationship, to me that logically says we should be paying for more of that than should be paid in 20 years when their officers are already retired, which is kind of the premise for that.
Clarity for me, your recommendation of a dedicated funding source is the sales taxes that we're generating off the market plan.
Well, that the delta, in other words, the city has been going without, but I guess some of the sales tax going to the marketplace, we already gained 60% of it. Oh yeah, now after that time frame has gone away, now the city gets 100%. Well, that difference, the city has been going without for all these years and been doing fine. So if that delta becomes our revenue source, you know, to fund the PSPRS, you know, it's obviously, you can project how much it is because we projected it for FY21. And based on how the sales tax is progressing throughout the year, you can make a determination in, as part of the budget, how much of an additional payment you want to make. And if you want to break it up in a couple payments just to have more flexibility in case something happens during a fiscal year, you can put the money in a fund balance category if you don't spend it 1 year, so you have it there for the next year. And so it gives you flexibility, and it's still, because we're looking at it annually, you know, it still gives mayor and council flexibility to do other things if they so choose.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I'd ask Mary and David, is that money spoken for already?
Well, I will tell you that the current fiscal year, that's exactly what I did, is exactly what Commissioner Mason mentioned.
And that's fine, because obviously we're in different times right now, but once we get through the pandemic, then
if I may, based on this conversation, so if you look at the bullet at the bottom of your page 2, where it says budget an additional payment of at least $500,000 toward the unfunded actuarial accrued liability as part of the FY 2021 annual budget process based on funding availability, that it perhaps for this coming fiscal year, and a way to address what you're talking about, especially given the fact that there's a little bit of uncertainty for now, is to add to it, and I'd come back to you with the language, but you know, the town should strive to designate an ongoing revenue source for this payment annually. And just
3 years or whatever.
Annually, there. Yeah, and then it'll be reviewed every year. But it's in there, and you know, and again, the bullet ahead says payment of $500,000 based on funding availability. So I think that is still kind of current. And by the way, I did want to mention, because I pulled up the Arizona revised statute really quickly, so I wanted to double check something. The reason why the assets liabilities current funding ratio is identified is because it's required by state statute. The town council must adopt that set of funding ratio and those numbers that you see in the policy. That's not an option. It's a requirement that must be included in the policy.
So it shows the 100%? Is that what it's asking for?
No. Exactly what is on that paragraph where it says, council formally accepts the assets, liabilities, yada, yada, yada. And then right. It has the trust fund, the assets, the accrued liability, and then the funded ratio. That specifically has to be included in the policy per state law.
Okay. What about the next paragraph down where the council's funding goal is 100%? Is that referenced at all in the state statute requirement?
What the state, hold on, I'll tell you. It's a very brief policy. It just says, it says the pension funding policy should include funding objectives that address at least the following: how to maintain stability of the governing body's contributions to the system, how and when the governing body's funding requirements of the system will be met, defining the governing body's funded ratio target under the system and the timeline for reaching the targeted funded ratio. It doesn't say it has to be 100%, and not every community is doing 100%. Some are doing 80, some are doing 90, you know, so it does not have to be 100%. Formally accept the employer's share of the assets and liabilities under the system based on the system's actuarial valuation report, and that the policy must be posted on the website. That is the extent of the whole state law.
Okay. All right.
So just going back to what I did here was striving to designate an ongoing revenue source. Got that. You're obviously continuing to recommend 100% funding ratio goal. I'm not hearing anything different from 100% funding ratio, and I certainly would agree with that. Maintaining the ARC payments. And that is, you know, out of that, for example, I mean, you probably got the follow-up information for the council. Out of our payment budgeted for next fiscal year, about $2 million of that goes straight to our unfunded liability. So that already is, you know, that a chunk of it, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Dave, it's about almost half, if I'm not mistaken, isn't it?
Yes.
That goes to the unfunded liability. So that, again, that's just a statement. Retain the 20-year amortization rather than 30 years. That's doesn't change. Review local board practices annually. That doesn't change, and that's the PSPRS board. That's a different board. Apply adopted financial policies dedicating surplus funds at year end toward reducing the unfunded liability. And again, that's in the town council's financial policies already. And then the $500,000. So, and again, that's the policy. That's the 30,000 foot policy.
Would you want to identify what the revenue source is?
Well, I mean, it's general fund. So I don't think you can really.
But again, it's all general fund, but the purpose, I guess, is you're having a specific revenue within the general fund. So that it gives it a little bit more, I guess, stability, I guess, or firmness, because otherwise you become, you know, do you even decide to fund it or not because of other, it just seems to me with a dedicated revenue source, even though you may not be able to make something 1 year, if you still have that coming in or you're putting it there, you can make it another year without impacting other priorities, let's say, within the general fund, you know, unless there's some big recession or something, obviously, but.
Right. And remember, we've always gotten all of the revenue, always. We've always got 100% of the revenue. We just have to give back 40% to the Oro Valley Marketplace. So it's really not that we're getting more revenue, it's that we're not having a particular expense.
Which kind of helps out too.
Right. But right. That's kind of a hard thing to specifically identify. Take the expense that used to be, like, we don't do that in any other area of our budget. I think, you know, identifying sales taxes or whatever. I think really what you're talking about is
the amount is, or estimate what it is, because you've done it. So you have an idea of what that amount would be, or you could do it without any trouble because you're obviously have some way of determining it, I guess. So, but anyway, that's a thought.
Right. It sounds like what you're recommending is that this be included as part of the operating budget and not from excess revenues. But again, I think as Commissioner Salverson mentioned, it's the goal is $500,000. If the town has the resources to be able to pay for it out of another fund, if the outcome is still achieved, and we can hit that every year.
I think the goal was at least 500. I would think for us to
right at least 500.
We're going to have to make more than 500,000 probably in some years down the line to make this work. And you know, getting your, I guess I'm just trying to think of not impacting the other priorities in the general fund. If you have something that says we're going to use this and we can estimate it and so forth. So anyway, that's just my thought.
Okay.
I think there's the policy, and then I think in addition to the policy, there's maybe some more practical analysis that needs to be done every year. And I'm not suggesting that we put it in the policy, but I'm suggesting that we need to look at it and review it, because I don't think you're going to get there by putting $500,000 a year in, even though that's a good start. And I'm happy to see that, you know, we've got it on the table and we're going down that path, but maybe even every year, some extra analysis goes into the budgeting process, you know?
And we have it at least, so that gives the option to make more.
Right. Yeah. I'm not suggesting we change it, but I'm concerned that if that is the minimum that is met every year only, that you're just not going to get there. You're just going to have a too big of a liability.
Let me just ask the question. In the last point where We currently have a directive of the policy that says budget an additional payment of at least $500,000 toward the unfunded liability debt as part of the annual budget process based on funding availability. Is that what we currently have? Is that what
yeah, the... I don't like that part, based on funding availability, but...
So at this stage, what we've got is a proposal into the policy. The only thing that we don't have is, Jim, whether we're going to advocate putting in benchmarks.
Right.
And secondly, whether there's a funding source. But it looks like everything else that we've been talking about is in the policy.
Pretty much, yeah.
And by the way, I do have both of them. I want to say that, and David didn't realize this, but the before Kevin left, he did actually, your last conversation, you included in the second bullet in the policy that says, at such time the ARC is projected to be reduced, the town should endeavor to continue paying the ARC at the higher rate to help. That's new from the current policy, and that was at your, so you added that from the conversation back in February.
We did.
Yeah, the attempt was to try to get a flat dollar amount.
Right. Absolutely.
Even though the actuary fall for dollars would decline as the funding amount
keep
went
paying.
Up.
Keep paying principal, right?
Right. Yeah. Keep paying principal.
Yeah. Yeah, and absolutely. I think the idea that it's not that that we don't have a huge obligation at the end or aren't paying it off all today. The idea is that it is somewhat flat, right?
Right, absolutely.
And that it's an obligation that we are committed to paying.
So I would welcome the final consensus on the issue of additional information in the policy going back 5 years so that we can draft a red line version for you. Is it in or is it not?
I'd like to see it in because I think it's valuable information. What does everybody else
think? Can you just put an attachment and
an attachment would be fine. I don't have an issue with that either.
Yeah.
I would support an attachment. I think maybe part of the policy just makes the policy that much more complicated.
Got it.
We'll know what it's about.
Heard ya.
Easy enough.
Okay. Got that. So then we have, we'll massage and figure out some proposed language for you on the ongoing revenue source for your consideration that you can take a look at. We'll go ahead and refer to an attachment or appendix or something of that nature that goes back those 5 years. We added that other piece.
You could attach note 17 of the CAFR.
Okay, I'll let Dave make that.
We don't have to reinvent anything. Sorry, available.
We love not reinventing. It's one of my favorite things ever. you already added the ARC, that second bullet. So that was added from your last conversation. What else are we missing from the
what about policy? The question of funding targets?
Funding targets for the future.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you have in mind? And where do you think it belongs in the policy?
The funding goal in that section right there.
Okay.
I'd like to see a simple chart, and obviously, since this thing is updated every year, those targets can be adjusted based on heaven forbid if we have this pandemic that lasts for multiple years or something and create some flexibility to us. But you know, I'd kind of like to see 2024, 2028, 2032, and 2036. We've already identified 36 as 100%. I mean, if we really wanted to be simplistic about this whole thing, you could take 2024 and say a 70% funded ratio, a 2028 at 80%, 2032 at 90%. Is that kind of what you were thinking about, Kathy?
Yeah, I think you could just put it as just it's a top level goal to plan to.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a target. It
gives you direction, right?
Yeah.
It's not a have to, but it's a here's a way to get there that probably makes sense.
Okay, I think that we could do that literally at the bottom. It says the very last paragraph says it's hereby the town council's intent to achieve the goal of 100% funding by June 30, 2036. In accordance with blah, 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 blah. And then it could say, in that vein, the town should strive to achieve the following funding ratio targets and put exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, that works.
Okay. We'll work on that.
Good. Yeah.
So based on that, and based on the fact that the town council has to vote on this on June the 17th, my recommendation to you is that you hold the meeting on Thursday morning at 9 a.m. and that we post for you two agenda items. One would be the town manager's recommended budget, and the commission can determine if you wanted specific recommendations for the council in that regard. And the second would be this funding policy. And then you can wrap up your review and make a motion, the appropriate motion for the commission. How's that sound?
Okay, so we'll have a Zoom meeting on Thursday, the 4th of May at 9 a.m.
June.
Yeah, my calendar rolls from May to June, so I screwed up. Does that work for the rest of the commission members? Of course, we don't know about Dave doing his availability.
Yeah,
I believe he indicated he would be available previously, so we'll follow up with him.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, so far I have received no indication that none of you are available. It appears that all of you are available in addition to liaison Nicholson as well.
Oh, great. Will there be anything else on our agenda other than this?
And the recommended budget, those two items.
Yeah.
That's all we have at this point.
And just to be clear on the recommended budget, we're looking for just that, a recommendation from the commission to the council.
The commission may make a recommendation to council, yes.
Mr. Chair, just one last comment here, real quickly, 45 seconds. I wanted to let Mary and the team know that I've been talking to a couple of my neighbors over the past week, and they were quite impressed with how the pandemic has not been so disruptive in their lives. And they gave a lot of credit to the town. And I don't think they know that I have any affiliation with the town, but this was more than just one neighbor. And they felt like they were really informed, that they were communicated with, and that they felt that there was just very little disruption, except when they had to go into Fry's and put their mask on. And you know, Mary, that it's out there. You folks have really done a wonderful job, and you're being commended with your entire team. And I suspect that the mayor and the council need to be commended as well. I hope my colleagues will join me in that commendation.
But I
thought you know that.
I will pass along your kind words to the team and the council. Thank you, sir.
You know, what would would also be interesting maybe to communicate more is that I never really gave any thought to everyone buying things online and the fact that those sales taxes keep rolling into the town. All of us think about the physical plant and maybe our inability of getting out and doing that kind of shopping. And if we buy it at Costco, we get it here. And that's maybe some communications along that line might help people too.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for us, just as an example, we also don't have, you know, some of those large, like we have no auto dealers here in Oro Valley. And those usually tank, and they're big dollars too. So you usually see some of those big drop-offs. Scottsdale type shopping, you know, where that starts to kind of come down a little bit. And we only have four hotels. So, you know, other communities that might have a boatload of hotels are going to see a little bit different impact on their sales taxes than say we would here. We've obviously included a pretty significant drop off, and we get from our four hotels, mostly one hotel, right? We get some pretty good revenues from there. But we have a different mix in terms of our, where most of our retail comes from. But we'll certainly let, I know, like I said, me personally, I was super happy when my home shopping can continue to benefit the town because it is the most convenient way for me to shop. And I think a lot of other people, and during this pandemic, people were still buying, you know, think about the kind of community that we have. We have a lot of folks who have fixed incomes, right? Retirement incomes that are not going down. They're continuing to buy. They just weren't going out to do it, but they were still taking advantage. So bar and restaurant, we were hit. Certainly, we're hoping that will pick back up again, and we're starting to see some improvements. We really want our businesses to succeed, and fingers crossed. The one thing we know for sure is in the history of mankind, every pandemic has ended.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah.
May take a little while, but it's true.
Yep.
That's right. So there is a light at the end of the tunnel. We just don't know how long that's going to be.
Well, keep your fingers crossed.
That's right. We will get an agenda out, if not tonight, first thing in the morning before 9 a.m. to meet the posting requirements. So you'll see that come across in your email.
Okay. Are there any other future agenda items we need to talk about? If not, can I hear a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Okay.
Okay, I heard a second, so all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. I thought from my point, I think the Zoom meeting went A-okay, so I can't complain.
Mr. Chairman, you did
nice job, Mr. Chairman.
And thank you for your patience with me on the first meeting.
Thank you, David and Mary, as always.
We'll work you over time, David.
Thank you all. Have a good evening. We'll see you on Thursday.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.